Service Radio.
Full Service Radio. So we've just had the Oscars, and it showed some signs of more diversity. Normally, that would be the biggest televised piece of theater this week. But these are not normal times. The drama of the award show was nothing compared to the testimony of Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former lawyer and fixer, to the House Oversight Committee in Congress. Ooh, did y'all get y'all's popcorn? So Cohen branded the president a racist, a con man, and a cheat. He also said some stuff that we didn't already know. We're going to unpack it all today with our usual combination of wit and insight. This is Politics. Welcome once again to Politics with me, your host, Paul Wharton. So we're recording live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. with Jack Inslee and the Full Service Radio crew. Hey, Jack.
How's it going, Paul?
I'm doing great. So I'm joined this week by my friend and writing partner, part-time hooligan and full-time Brit, Mikhail. And the accent, it's actually not fake, in case anyone wondered. Hey, Mikhail.
Namaste.
I have a few other lovely ladies that are going to be joining us later. But first, we are also being joined by one of the most renowned classical opera singers in the world, Mr. Anthony Kearns. Very excited to talk to him, you know, especially because I just met Sarah Brightman. That was really exciting. Hello. Aside from politics, we're going to be talking about diversity in the entertainment industry. I know a few things about that from all angles. Before we get into all of that, politics would not be possible without our fabulous sponsors, the Batar Cosmetic Institute. If you've ever wondered how my skin is impossibly fresh and my face is youthful, it's because of the Batar Cosmetic Institute. Everything from hydrafacials to Exilis, every aesthetics enhancement treatments, they have it. Ooh, they are so fabulous. Check them out online at batarinstitute.com. Mervis Diamonds, it's always a great time to get engaged. Check out their latest arrangements of engagement rings and diamond earrings and bracelets, all the good stuff at MervisDiamond.com. And Metro Offices, they are DC's premier co-working space. I've been a client for more than 10 years and I love them. Check out all of their offices. They have more than 11 suites around town in DC, Maryland, and Virginia at MetroOffice.com. That is 1-0. Okay, let's get into this. So, the biggest news story this week had to be Michael Cohen. He testified in Congress before the House Oversight Committee, and it was huge. So, he dropped some major bombshells. Mikhail, I mean, were you biting your fingernails?
Yeah, no, I was I had a transcript going up on my computer as I was working at the time. It was just insane. I know loads of people everywhere were like tweeting about it, texting about it. It was massive.
So you're pretty new to this country and you thought that, I mean, you thought that you had some drama with Brexit. Now yeah. You come over here and we completely tear our draws, right? What do y'all say about us Americans?
Well, so historically, then the British perhaps had a perception that the Americans were a little more dramatic about things. But then we voted for Brexit. And so to be honest, I don't think we've got any call anymore, man.
Really? So let me give the people some background. I mean, not that everybody doesn't know this, but Cohen was Trump's personal lawyer and fixer for 12 years. He was like his Ray Donovan.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah,
it's exactly a good way of doing it. Yeah. So he was on the boards of Trump's companies and charities and even the deputy finance chair for the RNC. So the Mueller's investigation meant the authorities dug into his dealings heavily. All of this is coming out. He was actually found guilty of campaign finance violations, tax fraud, and bank fraud.
So he did a lot of dodgy stuff.
He did a lot of dodgy stuff, and he says in defense of Donald Trump and trying to support Donald Trump for many years. It was interesting yesterday in the hearings as I was watching, and he actually said it at one point. He says, you know, for every Republican that asked him any questions, like no one asked anything about Donald Trump. It was all about Michael Cohen's fraud and him defrauding a mortgage company, of which he said, yeah, you know, even though I guess he falsified some of the applications, he never left anybody, you know, he doesn't owe anybody any money, and all of these things were coming out. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, Cohen, the thing about Cohen is his best line in the entire thing was when he said, "I realize I have a credibility problem." And you're like, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. He's like, you can't have sympathy for this guy, I don't think, in the sense that he did a lot of very dodgy things. He threatened a lot of people to get them to be quiet. He pushed a lot of things like that. And he did it all before. And essentially, he would have carried on arguably getting away with it, working sort of just on the sidelines and crossing over, breaking the law periodically, but kind of getting away with it if people hadn't looked too closely. But then, yeah, obviously, there was a presidential campaign came up. He got involved in that, drawn into it, and then they dug it out. So this, I mean, to be clear, this is not about necessarily collusion. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't caught on the collusion front for that. But then they looked into all this stuff, and they must have been like, oh, my God.
Exactly. So one big thing that they looked into was, of course, Stormy Daniels. We all know that name. So she alleges that she slept with Donald Trump. Oh, was there any sleeping going on? She sleep next to that fool. Ugh. She slept with Donald Trump. She should have been paid that money and more to say that. I would never have admitted to that ever. Not for $130,000. And he paid her $130,000 in hush money to sign an NDA in 2016 during the presidential campaign. So Trump denied knowing anything about this. He didn't know anything. He didn't know anything about any money. Nothing. Cohen produced a set of checks he says showed Trump was paying him back for making the initial payments.
Yeah, so the big thing here is like, so it's unpacking it. So, of course, like, if you're going to go and have an affair, you go and have an affair, it's your business. If you're going to go and pay them off and ask them to sign a non-disclosure agreement not to do it, it's your business. But they did it around the time of the presidential election. They effectively did it. So it counts as a campaign contribution because they paid the money to help his campaign. But they didn't declare it because they didn't go and say publicly, and we also spent $130,000 on silencing a former porn star.
I see.
In terms of doing that.
Okay, so that's what the disclosure was about.
That's what it was about. And so the issue was, so Cohen said, no, it didn't happen. Trump denied it, first of all. And this is the thing. They lied. They denied it. They said, we don't know about it. Trump still says he didn't know about it.
Okay, so that one check that they showed, that he showed for $35,000, yeah, came from Donald Trump's personal account. Did any of the money to pay Cohen back come from the campaign's money?
So, well, no. They're saying that the money, so the money that was paid to Stormy Daniels actually went through a separate company that Cohen set up. So Cohen went and set up this like Delaware-based entity, because everything in America is based in Delaware. Mm-hmm. And so he ran it through, and he had that, and so he paid the money to it through that. He then, in a stroke of extraordinary genius, continued to operate the company doing other stuff as well. So he left a massive paper trail for everyone to look at. So he was like, I mean, bold, not necessarily the brightest, but whatever. And they went and did that. And so he is alleging that Donald Trump, and again, it's an allegation at this point, but he's alleging that Trump paid him this check amongst other checks to repay the $130,000 that he'd used to do that. So it didn't have to come out of the campaign. The fact that it was coming from someone involved with the campaign and being used as what classifies the campaign thing is the issue. So then the issue is then, well, do you believe Cohen that
I Trump found him to be extremely credible? And, you know, people can lie. And he said yesterday, he says, look, I've lied, but I'm not a liar. It might be tough, but but a liar can tell the truth at some point. I mean, the evidence was all in his favor. He came bearing receipts.
Well, he had the documents. And also, remember that what we don't know, so there were 3 days of hearings. 2 days of them were actually behind closed doors. The first day happened, it was like 12 hours long. He had all the documents. That's where the initial extracts came out. Then he went and did the public hearing, and then they had another hearing afterwards. So there's a ton of information that he put out there, and there's loads of things that's given to it. I mean, does any of it make any massive difference? I mean, who knows? But in the real world, in terms of affecting things, but
yeah,
it definitely paints a really dodgy picture.
So Cohen says that Trump knew in advance of Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with the Russians in 2015 at Trump Tower to get dirt on Hillary. He actually said he walked behind the desk and he whispered to his father, but he could hear him say, the meeting's all set up. So is this what's going down in the Oval Office? Like, what is going on over there?
It's all very House of Cards, isn't it? It's all like, yes. And then he sat there and there was a hushed conversation. And then they exchanged a look and he raised his eyebrow. I don't know. It does sound a bit like the plot from a drama. But yeah, he claims that they went and said meeting's on. He said hopefully they'll give give some dirt. And I think Trump, I think he alleges that Trump said something like, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
So like any good Devo, I'm not a Devo, I'm a Devo, okay? So I'm the male version. I have an entourage, darling. I have an entourage, and they are an entourage of love and support and friendship. And so two ladies that are here in studio with us today that I want them to chime in from time to time. My makeup artist, Janelle, you all might know her. Jazzy Janelle. Say hey, Janelle.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Good, good. What's going on with you?
Nothing much. Just wanted to come by and
pleasant surprise.
I know.
She just texted me like 30 minutes ago. She says, what time are you recording the podcast? I said, I'm coming in soon. And she says, I'll be there. I said, great, come on.
No, glad you could join.
Yes, thank you.
So also my friend, the fabulous Shonda Wallace, is up from Richmond to visit me or whatever.
I'm here for the Brussels sprouts. I just came because he promised me lunch, so I didn't know this was going on.
To be clear to the audience, we don't have Brussels sprouts in the studio, but there is a restaurant.
I have them in my pocket. You don't know what I'm doing.
That was the smell.
That was it. It's my sprouts.
So, Shonda, you watched some of the testimony yesterday. Quick thoughts on that.
Quick thoughts initially. Mm-hmm. I spent most of my time Googling who the House committee people were, and it was a couple that stood out, but... I am on the side of, I wish that, you know, for the moral compass of it, obviously your president, not mine, doesn't have much of one. And I wish that at some point it would have made more sense to me for him to be forthcoming and saying all this stuff beforehand. And that's what I was saying, Paul, earlier. It doesn't make sense to me when you get caught and you start pointing out other people. Because it's like you're just trying to get out of something as opposed to just being a person and saying, you know what? This doesn't sit right with my heart. This is what I have to say. But to say that he was racist, he's misogynist, and he's demeaning to blacks. I mean, everything that he's saying during this whole testimony, it's saying to me, well, you went along with it and you covered for him and you took care of it. Therefore, what are you?
Right.
You know,
Well, he admitted that. I mean, and he said, you know, and yet and still I continue to work for him. And people can have a change of heart. I mean, people got on Omarosa about that. You know, I have my own thoughts about that because I feel like I'll keep my thoughts to myself for now. It's not about that today.
Right.
But basically, you know, you question all these people working around Donald Trump. How did we feel when Lynn Patton was brought out by Meadows that brought out Lynn Patton? So Lynn actually works for the administration. She was brought in by Michael Cohen, and she is one of the black faces of the administration, because whenever they need to do anything that's Black History Month or diversity, they pull Lynn Patton and they prop her up. So yesterday, she was there, some say as a prop. How do you feel about that, Mikhail?
Well, for me, it's very hard to... Well, it's hard to say. Not that listeners can hear this, but I'm a mixed race, obviously straight man. So I wouldn't want to comment too much in terms of there being like a black female that was put in there. It's arguably for optics, you know. But I mean, also at the same time, the one thing I would say is, and while I don't agree with people that necessarily work for the administration and do that, I don't know if I can necessarily just call the motive being that she's automatically purely there for that. She may believe in what she's doing. She may believe in that. She may not do. And maybe she's there because she had a role to play at that point. But it's very hard not to be cynical about it and say, look, you happen to pull out, you've got a guy coming in saying he's racist. You know he's going to say it because he said it the day before behind closed doors. So you roll out your greatest figurehead for that.
So the negotiations with Kim Jong-un completely broke down at that point. Now, how many of you feel like Donald Trump just got a nasty case of indigestion? Just like, you know what? You don't want to do the deal. I got to go home. Like, you know, I mean, how much do you think the Michael Cohen testimony played into that breaking down? Or, you know, Kim wasn't there to make a deal anyway. What do you think?
Well, Kim wasn't there to make it. He probably wasn't there to make a deal. Right. But also, I mean, you could argue the amount he was tweeting during it,
were they in the same room at any point?
Was he tweeting a lot? I didn't even see his tweets.
He tweeted a fair bit. But I wonder, I mean, to be fair, I don't know if they're just sitting there and it was one of these hilarious sort of like friends meeting for coffee situations where everyone sat at a table just on their phone doing
their phones.
And they were like, oh, hang on. No, we got a thing, right? We got to do it.
Yeah. Can I get 15 minutes of your time? Yeah, hold on. I just got this one more thing. I got to tweet.
Oh my gosh, I love it. So what do you think about Cohen saying that Trump knew Roger Stone was talking to WikiLeaks about releasing the damaging intel on Hillary?
Well, I mean, that again is huge. So with all of this stuff, you say it's they're bombshell things, because although we kind of knew it and already knew about it, it's a different thing to have someone who was right there through this entire period saying it happened. Again, a lot of this stuff is his word against someone else's word, and his word. He's convicted of lying, so to be clear. And he only had a change of heart after he then started finding he was going to get convicted.
As one does.
As one does. I mean, things like a felony, prison sentence.
Get caught.
His whole Nixon back tattoo. Who wouldn't think that Roger Stone was talking to WikiLeaks?
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's the thing. I mean, it probably bodes badly for Roger Stone, because Roger Stone, probably worse for Stone, arguably, than Donald Trump, because President Trump is denying it, but he's the president, he's got his backing. Roger Stone is publicly saying and has said in court, I didn't do this stuff. And if you've got another witness saying he did.
Well, the plot thickens, and let me tell you something. I know it's politics, but it is oh so entertaining. And so, speaking of entertainment, this week we want to look at diversity in entertainment, and we'll talk more about the Oscars a little bit later. But first, we have an incredible guest. Anthony Kearns is one of the most famous classical opera singers in the world, one of the Irish tenors, a man who sung for the Pope and for presidents, and he's performing in Washington, D.C. this Sunday, March 3rd at the Perry Belmont House. I can't wait to hear this voice. We have Anthony here.
Yes. Hi. How are you doing?
Hey, Anthony. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Listen, I have some Irish friends, and can you explain something to me? What does Tírnínóg mean? Tírnínóg,
well,
what is that?
Well, it translates, means the land of the young. So it's this kind of fairy tale stuff. Tírnínóg, land of the young.
Tírnínóg. Was it like a horse in a show or something? Was it a horse called Tírnínóg or a dog?
No, it's just old Irish fables, shall we say, of Tírnínóg, the land of the young, and the story of Fionn and Oisín and all these guys. And the guy steps down off his horse to help with the moving of a stone, and he falls off his horse and he lands on the ground, and he becomes old and ancient. He was told not to step off his horse. He was given the Fountain of Youth, and that was one of the stories, the gist of one of the stories. He steps off his horse and he ages instantly to an old man.
Oh my God, that's so scary to me as somebody that does not want to age instantly. You don't even have any idea. You should Google me. You'll say, oh, yes, I understand. I knew it had something to do with the horse. Now, listen.
Stay on the horse is the moral of the story.
Stay on the horse. Well, I heard a bit about your background story in terms of this competition that you had the opportunity to be a part of, and you called in. Tell us a little bit about how you first got started with this competition. I heard that you called into, I don't know if it was a radio show, but you kind of sang for your life, and then you became a finalist, and then you had to hitchhike for 5 hours, and then you end up winning the competition. It's like the Irish dream come true.
Well, there you go. I mean, nowadays you just go on American Idol and you win it and you become a star overnight. That was my American Idol moment. Yes, in fact, I did call into a radio station and managed to get through, which was amazing. But I got in on the radio, I sang down the line, and I qualified to the next round, and then made it to the final, which was an ungodly hour of 9 a.m. in Dublin on a cold October morning, and I managed to win the final.
I love it. And now you are performing all around. What were some of your most memorable concerts to this point?
Well, we had a huge break years after that competition. I joined a group called the Irish Tenors, and we launched onto scene in America in 1999. And I suppose one of the most memorable venues or events would have been Ellis Island back in 2002. And we played all over the world. I mean, we played the Sydney Opera House, we played Carnegie Hall numerous times, Radio City Music. We've been fortunate to play the venues that everyone wants to play. And it's just a wonderful opportunity. We hit the ground running with PBS, and we were the darlings of PBS, along with Luciano Pavarotti, Domingo Carreras, and Riverdance, and Andrea Bocelli, and all of those. So it was a time that there was an abundance of music, and we were fortunate to be in the slipstream.
I think that's fantastic. I was telling the people here in studio A few weeks ago, I work on a show called Good Morning Washington here in D.C., and a few weeks ago, Sarah Brightman was in the studio.
And my goodness.
Isn't that something?
That's amazing. She's going a long, long time. I mean, it's a credit to her. I remember starting out, and she was like on top of her game, and she was doing the concerts with Andrea Bocelli, and they had recorded Time to Say Goodbye. And
yes.
She just knows how to reinvent herself all the time. It's credit to her.
She really does. Should we do Time to... You want to take her part?
Say goodbye.
I'll go all day. I will go all day. Now, listen, having a really big moment for musicals. Of course, you guys probably are too, because anything that we do, you Irish people like, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So between The Greatest Showman and A Star is Born, what do you think about this kind of music, musicals being so big right now?
Which kind of music? Musical,
well,
theater?
Greatest Showman and A Star is Born, some of our movies.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's not my bag, but it is fantastic music. It's full of life and energy. And I tell you, it's not easy to sing, let me tell you. It's big thing. But it's colorful and spectacular, and I think it's wonderful.
Do you think there's anything... Anthony.
Yeah, sure.
No, I was saying, do you think there's anything driving that push back towards it? Because for years, then, things like musicals, and not just musicals, but classical music and opera, for a long time, I think, I don't want to say everywhere, but there was an idea that it was a little bit sort of retro, it was a bit older in its style and wasn't as cool, and now it seems to be coming back greatly.
Well, you see, it's the great thing when you have TV to drive it. I mean, back in the day when I was growing up, I watched all these shows from America, and that's where a lot of the musicals... There was major budgets, there was wonderful costumes, and the songs, again, you know, that was, they had the key songs in the shows that carried it. And it's the same thing, really, only years later. I mean, I remember listening to and watching several shows with big hit tunes from musicals from West End, and it was fabulous. And I hope there's a return to that, because it's, as I call them, I put them in a category as evergreens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're always so. There. They're wonderful tunes. People never tire of them. You hear them every day in advertising, and you know, people. It's a tune that people will whistle and sing along to, and everyone recognizes, from the man on the street to the man at the top. So,
absolutely,
it's a resurgence of that kind of style and that music again. It's a wonderful thing to see. So,
okay,
let's
great.
Have more of it.
Well, we're going to be talking a little bit after this about diversity in entertainment, because, of course, we have the Oscars, we've got a lot of things like that. So one thing is, while there's obviously at the moment a great focus, I think, on sort of ethnicity and gender and things in entertainment, try and increase it, there's also something about class that applies, and obviously in America it's a little bit different. Certainly I'm British from the UK and to a degree in Ireland. Generally speaking, people who go into that sort of industry tend to be from middle-class backgrounds. It tends to be restrictive for people that aren't from that sort of space. And obviously you came from a farming family, as I understand it, farming background. You managed to get into it and do that. What do you think? Do you think we're improving it? Do you think it's still the same? Do you think there are things we need to be doing to try to open this sort of thing up to get more talent?
Well, the hard thing for me starting out was finding the right road to head down. I mean, it was trial and error. I entered a lot of competitions. I started out in Ireland singing Irish traditional tunes. Then I kind of sang some musicals and shows in school, and I was finding my footing. And finally, this competition that I stumbled upon, yet another competition of one of many I had performed years later, this pointed me in the right direction. And in my case, all roads led to Dublin, and it introduced me to a singing teacher. So the thing is, I suppose, education is the key. It needs to be introduced in the schools throughout. If you start them at a young age and get the appetite there, if kids are performing excerpts from musicals or excerpts from shows, like in my time as Gilbert and Sullivan, I think that's kind of gone off the scene now, but wonderful music that they will carry all through their lives. And some, it may strike a chord with them, it may spark something in them, as it did with me, but failing that, it will give people an appreciation of music. If they never enter the business itself, they'll appreciate it, and you will have audiences for shows. So it starts at the grassroots.
Yeah, education, everything, isn't it?
Yeah. I love that.
It really is. Yeah, it really is.
So, Anthony, what can we expect? You are going to be in D.C. this Sunday, March 3rd, at the Perry Belmont House. And by the way, have you ever been there before? Because it's absolutely stunning.
I've never been there. I've seen the photographs, and I'm half afraid to go in now.
It's very fancy. It is a palace. It is a palace. What can the people expect from your concert? Of course, the tickets are available at eventbrite.com, but what can the public expect to see this Sunday?
Well, the beautiful thing is these houses are where a lot of people performed my kind of music in the past. The great tenor John McCormack. In fact, Caruso would have performed at Perry Belmont House, believe it or not, in the early 1900s. Oh, wow. So it's the drawing room type ballad. With me, it's popular. It's a roller coaster of music. I sing from the musicals. I sing from Irish repertoire, from Neapolitan. I mix it up. It's an evening of, or an afternoon of, wonderful upbeat music. Romantic music, soul music, you know, music for the soul, spiritual uplifting music. So it's a mixed bag. The bottom line is entertainment. It takes people away from their troubles in their life for a couple of hours, and it's a lighter fare, but it's entertaining, and that's the bottom line.
Sounds like a perfect Sunday.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful afternoon with a lovely, I'm told I have a gold piano. That'll be a first. I'll be like Elton John at the piano.
It is wonderful. Well, listen, we are looking forward to seeing you there. I know that our friends Will Thomas and Barry Dixon are hosting the event. Anthony Kearns, classical, fabulous opera singer, will be in our town in D.C. on March 3rd at the Perry Belmont House. Tickets are available at eventbrite.com. Anthony, we look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Thank you very much. Let's take a trip down memory lane and revisit old songs in a beautiful house worthy of us.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Hey, are you much of a drinker?
Occasionally, I partake of the pint of Guinness for medicinal reasons.
That's what I wanted to hear, Anthony. You're smoking like a true Irishman. Medicinal reasons only.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anthony. We'll see you Sunday.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Oh, I just love the accent of the Irish.
That's fantastic.
What do you ladies think? Better Irish or Mikhail from the UK?
No judgment.
UK.
I mean, they're so similar. It's like you're right next door to each other. Yeah. Let me just, it's all UK, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Very diplomatic, Shonda.
Yeah, so I think that'd be pretty fantastic. See, I knew I was doing something special when I ran into Sarah Brightman at the show.
Wow.
I mean, that's incredible. Sarah Brightman.
She's a legend. That's insane.
Yeah, you see how excited Anthony was about her?
Super excited.
So continuing the theme, I want to talk about the Oscars in a wider context. You brought up diversity to Anthony. Of course, you know, when I do the Oscar recaps, I always talk about the fashion, by the way. What did you ladies think of the fashion?
Porter. That was everything.
Porter all the way.
I think we should have that. Billy Porter.
Oh, Billy Porter. Yeah, absolutely.
Because Glenn Close, she fell in love. Like, I watched a video of her, and she was just like...
The way she was looking at him, though?
I'm like, but just ready to risk it all.
Like, yeah. That was a little like a read, though. I didn't know what she was doing there with that look.
You see the way she looked?
You know what he looked like? What? You know when they do the Barbie cakes?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the round cake, and the Barbie is just sticking up out of it? Yeah, I had one of those. That's what it reminded me of. I was like, I want a Barbie.
Well, I'll tell you about that look. So that look was designed by Christian Siriano, as you all know.
Yes.
But the show Pose on FX that Billy is an executive producer of, they had a gentleman by the name of Hector Extravaganza. So Hector is huge, is legendary, is a mother of the ballroom scene. And he was a consultant on Pose, and he actually recently passed away. And so Billy was playing homage to Hector Extravaganza because that was really his look.
Yes. Oh,
that was his tuxedo look with the big...
And I saw the comparison.
You
and
saw?
It was such a dope... I mean, it was such a great, like a great tribute. It was beautiful. He pulled it off really well. You know, I love all things ballroom, so...
I do.
He pulled it off really well.
So there was some incredible...
You look so confused. Like, what are we talking about?
No, I was just very impressed.
I'll pull the picture for you later. I'll show you.
Yeah. So there were definitely some incredible moments and some great wins. What was your favorite win of the night?
My favorite, obviously.
Regina King?
Regina. Regina, obviously, I cried.
Yeah.
And I looked at my daughter and I said, you know what? When you win, I want you to look down at the audience at me because I'm going to be your plus one.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you tell me the same thing and be like, Mommy, I cried. It was beautiful.
What about you, Janelle?
Spike Lee. Yeah, Spike Lee. That really just did something to my heart because he worked so hard in the industry. And it's just like for him to be recognized and to be on something and to get his Oscar. And just his reaction
and
of all
jumping
up in Samuel's arm. I'm just looking at that. I'm like, I'm happy for you because your friends are happy for you to see you win. And so that really warmed my heart to just see them celebrate along with him. And I'm just like, yay, we won.
Now, what level, Mikhail, of disappointment do you think that he might have because he's recognized now as an Oscar-winning writer and not necessarily Oscar-winning director? Yeah, well, you think this is personal?
Well, conveniently, he expressed some of his viewpoints on the
movie.
But this is a great look. Spike, obviously, he's an incredibly talented guy, mm-hmm. but he also is brilliant because he's not afraid to share his opinion. So there were a bunch of different things. Like, one is they asked him backstage what he thought about Green Book winning Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And apparently he just said, allow me to take another sip of my champagne.
Yeah.
And walked away.
Yeah.
And then the BBC interviewed him and he was brilliant. He summed up and he said, well, let me put it this way. It wasn't my cup of tea. So he hit it with analogy, sports analogy. He said he felt like he was at Madison Square Gardens and the ref made a bad call. I mean, the problem with Green Book is that it's a perfectly good film. And Mahershala Ali absolutely deserves the Oscar for that.
Absolutely.
I mean, that the guy is immensely talented, brilliant. He did it, but it does feel a little bit like the old style of film that would have been done. It is a little bit of the white savior trope, and as Spike Lee pointed out, I don't totally agree with him on this because otherwise you can't make anything again. But he was saying it's basically Driving Miss Daisy. You've just mm-hmm. changed the drivers.
Exactly.
To a degree, I'm like that. That's one thing. I don't think that's an argument against it. Nothing's truly original, but I think you've got a film that is basically made in the modern age. And it, although it really highlights this phenomenal talent that was behind it, it really does seem to carry a bit of the old style white savior thing. And it doesn't help that the family of the pianist as well condemned it.
Exactly. So for those that don't know, the film follows the unexpected friendship that blossoms between gruff New York bouncer Tony Lip, played by Viggo Mortensen, and Jamaican American world-class pianist Don Shirley, played by Mahershala Ali. When the latter hires Tony to drive him through the civil rights era South for a concert tour, rather than shining a much needed light on the fact that race relations haven't actually changed all that much since the 1960s, a la Black Klansman. Okay, so I see why his feathers are a little ruffled. Peter Farley's film takes a glib approach to its serious themes, reducing racism in America to a simple formula easily solved by the story's white protagonists. So I see why it's so interesting. I was speaking to some older people that had lived through the civil rights era, and they were like, Green Book, I'm so excited that Green Book won. And I'm like, but wait, hold up. I think we need to have a conversation. Why do you think the younger people are more outraged than some of the older people that I've heard?
Well, look, my view, the film's a good film. I mean, it's if you just watch it as a movie, I thought it was good, it was entertaining. But I think that part of it, to be fair to them, I think is maybe, and again, I don't want to question what the filmmakers were trying to do. They're probably trying to make the best film they could. But you have to think that in the modern age, you have a film called Green Book. The Green Book, of course, was, for anyone that doesn't know, it was not a guidebook, but effectively a driving book that would mark out places that were considered to be safe for mm-hmm. African American people to go
it
and stop
existed.
In and stay. It was a real thing. So you've made a film that is based on this concept. You've got the theme behind it. Mm-hmm. You're highlighting and trying to expose, you know, in a hidden figures sort of way to a degree, highlighting this incredible talent that people don't know about. But the expectation behind that is then that you shouldn't just make it all nice, sweet, and sappy. It shouldn't all wrap mm-hmm. up nicely in a bow. You should have allusions to this stuff. You should try to highlight some of these things. If you've got the old style film of saying, oh, well, there's a bunch of racist people, and then there's a white guy that starts off a bit racist, and then he slowly realizes his ignorance, and he goes and does it. It's not a bad story to tell, but we've seen it a lot of times. It doesn't have a lot of texture to it.
The thing that I think annoyed me most of all is that the family is saying that it was nothing like that. Mm-hmm. That their relationship, they didn't really have a real relationship. And they're upset that the director did not consult them. And his last surviving family members are saying it didn't happen like that. He was fired, supposedly.
The driver was fired.
The driver
yes.
was fired mm-hmm. because he refused to carry his bags. They didn't have a friendship. Mm. And they were saying that he remained racist, and they cut off, you know, and that was the end of that. But again, like you said, the, you know, great white hope thing, or the great, you know, the white savior, the same way we felt about that football movie with the guy mm-hmm. and who was it?
Sandra Bullock.
Yeah. That movie. People were looking at it like, that's nice, but that he, you know, it's a whole thing where, and that's a part of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you carry a movie without that element?
It was written by the son of the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, which adds to it as well, because then you're like, well, it's being told from an angle that is more positive.
Well, exactly. To me, it was kind of like when I saw the first award of Best Supporting Actor, I'm like, wait a minute, why isn't he the lead and Vigo supporting? Like, how'd you flip that thing around? It's
a movie on your life.
Yeah.
The life of this pianist. How is he the supporting? You don't support a role in a movie about you. So exactly. That's the outrage. But people like my grandmother, who actually went through the South and lived with the Green Book thing mm-hmm. and couldn't go to certain places. But my grandfather, who passed as white, used to map out certain places. He would go in and get food.
Sure.
But she thought the movie was genius. She was like, because it's nostalgic to them.
Right.
That's where it comes from.
I heard the same thing. I'm not going to say nostalgic. Who in my family thought, but they were just like, this is wonderful. I'm jumping up and down.
Well, maybe maybe they then created successfully the atmosphere of the time and things. But the mistake is you go and put a white protagonist mm-hmm. into that story. Mm-hmm.
Lead actor, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in other diversity news, one of the biggest movies of the year, possibly of all time, is being released very soon. Captain Marvel, starring Brie Larson. The first Marvel standalone superheroine movie. Already an online trolling campaign started just because of the female lead.
Yeah. Yeah, they've gone. I mean, this is something we've seen now loads. It's been going. It's the glory of social media and people getting onto it. And Cadwell, by the way, I should add, don't let the sophisticated accent fool you. I am a huge superhero and comic book fan, so I'm a complete geek.
Oh, you're a total nerd.
I am completely.
Compare notes, because I'm a bigger superhero geek. All superhero geeks.
So I'm ludicrously excited about this film. I think it's going to be very cool, especially as Captain Marvel. But here's the thing: there's a few reasons why it's upset so many. What we're presuming are like, I don't know, random sort of insecure men out there, is because first of all, it's a superheroine led film. It's a female superhero lead. Secondly, Captain Marvel in the Marvel universe, anyone doesn't know, is super powerful. Mm-hmm. Like she is the equivalent of Superman in the Marvel. Superman is in DC, in case anyone's confused. Captain Marvel is Marvel, and she is absolutely stronger than everybody else. She's individually more of a badass than everybody else. So, you know, if you're a little fanboy that feels like insecure in the trouser department, mm-hmm. then you're going to be like, well, this complete heroic female who's coming in and wiping the floor with mm-hmm. all of your male heroes is coming on.
If you still have a bunch of comic books under your bed at your mom's house, that guy's upset.
Now, is Sam Jackson going to be like in the film? Is that why they were together?
Samuel Jackson is going to be in the film.
Yeah. I'm like, your wife better not see you up there, Sam, posing with Brie Larson on that red carpet.
Yeah, no, they're in the film together.
So Rotten Tomatoes have changed their pre-release scoring system to try and counter the online attack. So it's that serious. So the true fans, some of the true fans, they just really do not want to see a woman in this role.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you call them true fans. These are people who just, they're unhappy about, I'm not going to question people who do
it.
Yeah, no, well, no, but it is, to be fair, if you're going to go and start going...
But you have to feel pretty strongly about Marvel to want to even go through all that.
I don't think it's about Marvel, though. I don't think they're about the character. I don't think they're about the story. I think there are people... The fact that this has been going... So this has been happening. This happened with Star Wars. It happened with Doctor Who. It happened with a whole bunch of different films and TV shows that have been going on. When they go and you just see it happened with Ghostbusters, the remake of Ghostbusters, people mm-hmm. questioned whether it was good. I actually thought it was I love Ghostbusters, the original, one of my favorite films of all time. I actually enjoyed the reboot of it, but irrespective of that, people just went and started hating it automatically because they turned it into females. And this is the wider issue that, if you ask me, is this, it really exposes, I don't know, I think the fantasy realm. I think the fantasy realm goes and really exposes prejudice to a whole new level, because you are willing to believe, I'll give you an example of Doctor Who. So there's a female Doctor Who now, mm-hmm. if anyone doesn't know. Very talented actress, Jodie Whittaker, and she's doing a great job. But here's the thing, they went. So you're going to believe that there is a guy who is a Time Lord who has two hearts, who flies around in a police box that travels through space and time, that every time he dies, he regenerates as a new actor, conveniently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he can never, so the series can go on forever. You can believe all that. And then when they announced a female Doctor Who, there was this massive outcry. Loads of people went online. They were like, oh, I'm not going to watch anymore. You can buy everything else up to that point. But when they become a woman, it suddenly is an issue. It's same thing with this. They're like, oh, we can buy into Iron Man. You can buy into Thor. Yeah. You can buy into all of these things. Oh, I don't know if I don't know how I feel about like a woman being stronger than someone else or being like
that. Wow. So the Star Wars stars, Daisy Ridley and Kelly Marie Tran, so they both left social media. They were being trolled so hard, huh?
Yeah, they stepped off. It was terrible, actually. They and Kelly Marie Tran in particular, so she was in... she was in the last Star Wars film, and she was a great character. She was a sort of smaller character, but she was brilliant. But, you know, when the Star Wars film came, they rebooted Star Wars, and they did, or not, did the sequels, I say, Star Wars. And bear in mind, they actually did something really good, the biggest franchise of all time, and they had a black guy, a Latino guy, and a female as the three lead roles. And it was fantastic, and a load of people complained about it. And then the second, you know, the last film that came, a load of guys complained about it because basically in the film, then there were a lot of women in charge, like Princess Leia, like other generals and stuff like that, loads of things. And they got upset because there were characters. I mean, it's just... It's,
they boycotted, but they were really there with shades on watching. Oh, same as all of us. They watched it.
This is so funny. This is such a nerdy conversation. That's I know right. nothing about these. But Ruby Rose, who I actually have a little crush on, so she is basically Batwoman. Tell us about the whole Batwoman lesbian character.
Yeah, yeah. So, so again, and like this is coming up because there's a new... so there's a character called Batwoman, and Batwoman was created, ironically enough, Batwoman was originally created back in like the 1950s as a comic book character because there was this book that came out that said comic books are rotting the youth's minds and claiming that Batman was gay and was promoting homosexuality. So they created Batwoman so he'd have a female character to sleep with, basically. So they're like, we did it.
Oh,
so,
because of Robin. There it is. That was the kinship.
It
right?
might have been the Robin thing.
It
I don't,
was because
well,
of Robin.
No, this is in the comic thing. But they create Batwoman anyway. They go on. Fast forward X number of times, they reboot her and they decide brilliantly to go and make her a lesbian as a character, which is great. So she's doing it. Now, Ruby Rose, they're now making it to a TV show. So finally, you've got another female lead sort of superhero character with their own show. And they're going to have this series, going to be on the CW. I think it's going to be great. Ruby Rose is very talented. But the thing is, she then got a load of backlash slightly the other way. So Ruby Rose came out as a lesbian when she was, I guess, a teenager, and she considered herself to be gender fluid. And then there was a backlash.
I mean, I guess
her.
The gay guy shouldn't be asking the straight guy, but when you go from being a lesbian to being gender fluid, or as I know many people to be gender nonconforming, you're still a lesbian, though, right?
No, don't you start that today. You're going to get a whole bit, you're going to get a lot of phone calls about that.
What? I mean, yeah, but you're still
no,
like
there are categories. No.
Excuse me?
It's a bunch of categories.
It's a bunch of categories. You don't know what you're talking
I
about.
I do know what I'm
you
talking
up in my neck of the world just because you got a whole bunch of little gay friends running around with you.
I know that. And because I have teen children who tell me things and I'm like, okay, yes, ma'am. Mom, you cannot assume genders. I'm sorry. Okay, let me write. I have
okay.
notes.
Well, I think, well, I mean, like, without stepping into that area, but like, not that I would ever tell a gay man about LGBTQ issues.
Like,
but the big thing is she also left social media because she went in and then there was a different kind of backlash because then people started complaining about the fact that, well, you know, the character is supposed to be lesbian and is Ruby Rose really a lesbian or is she really this? And now query whether or not those were actually from people who are, say, fans of it who want to do this, or whether it was people that were just trying to find ways to go and again pick up a fight about the fact that you've got a female character and you're a lead thing of all this kind of stuff. But I think there's a real issue that people are sort of I think it really just highlights the fact that people are willing to believe almost anything until it hits a point of prejudice in their mind or until it hits something that they don't want to accept in real life.
We have to talk about Ernie and Bert now. I mean, it's a whole thing. We're talking about...
You know what?
Well, it's a whole thing. Now
I'm not
going to
let you dorks take my show over. Sit down somewhere with all that.
It's a whole thing now. But you know what? Gender fluid is about pronouns, isn't it? And I think so. You can be a lesbian, but still be gender fluid because you don't take pronouns.
Sure.
I think that's what that is.
Oh, look at her. You're up on it.
I'm up on it.
I'm thrilled. Now, listen... For people that want to see you all, Shonda, what is your social media? What's your Instagram?
At Shonda Wallace, C-H-A-N-D-A-W-A-L-L-A-C-E. Because I want to make sure the C-H-A part of it. But it's difficult because people automatically call me Chandra, but it's Shonda.
It's Shonda. And if you need a good makeup artist in D.C., the fabulous Janelle, she is amazing. Which Instagram should people follow you on, Janelle?
They can follow me on my makeup page. That is JanelleZ.beauty. Again, JanelleZ.beauty.
And she has just been my tried and true, loyal confidant. She's there early in the morning. She's there late in the evening.
Hey, her eyebrows are everything. You're doing it. I'm sitting here like Janelle this. Thank you, Janelle. For being here.
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Janelle, for all the support that you offer. And Mikhail, you're not on anything.
No, I'm not. I'm a ghost online.
He's a ghost online.
Yeah. For what it's worth, next week, then Paul will have some cooler people on to talk about stuff that isn't related to comic books, talking fair movies.
No, we're the nerds. Nerds rock.
And nerds do rock.
It is our time.
Now, listen, I want people to check out every week we have new content on paulwhartonstyle.com. This week we have some great pieces from Ugent, Men's Style Essentials, something great that I loved, Float Your Way to Beautiful Skin and Vibrant Health. We give the full recipe for a magnesium soak that will get you pumped back up. You know how like our energy's been down and been a little bit low lately?
People have been saying that. Because you always look and act wonderful. So if you tell me it is, I'm doing it.
Then you're going to do it. I love it.
Because you're beautiful.
Thank you so much. Also, your Mind Zone, minus the cocktails, how to have a good time without even having a cocktail.
Nah.
It's there. It's there on PaulWhartonStyle.com. Five healthy and hearty crock pot meals. That's also on there. The piece de resistance, of course, my new candle from the Paul Wharton home line. Aunt Vera's Rolls Royce. You know, I talked about it a little bit last week, but I talked about my Aunt Vera and growing up, and she had this amazing Rolls Royce, and Aunt Vera would pick me up, and I felt like Black Liberace getting out the back seat.
You are Black Liberace.
I kind of am.
That's actually Paul's superhero moniker.
Yeah, it is. That's his nerdy thing.
I have one of those candles. They're amazing. Brilliant.
Yes, they are. So, yeah, definitely check those out on my site. They are for sale now. And that's pretty much what's going on this week. We want to thank Anthony Kearns. You can see him at the Perry Belmont House this Sunday, March 3rd. Tickets are available at eventbrite.com. And, hey, you know what? You got the look. I wrote a book.
Amen.
I get you hooked.
Thank you.
Bye, Jack. Nice, thank you.
Strong woman, strong mind. The inner goddess you will find. Iconic.